Exodus 40, verse number 34. It says, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled upon it, and the glory of the Lord filled settled upon it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, whenever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted. So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel during all their travels. So then for the past 4 months, we've been walking through this very important text, the book of Exodus. The Old Testament narrative of Exodus tells the story of God's miraculous rescue of an enslaved nation and their consequent travels toward a new residence. For the past 4 months, we have devoured this text. We have explored several themes and topics. We have been challenged in so many ways, because in so many ways, we are just like the Israelites in Egypt. In so many ways, things are still the same. I really hope you all took the time to read through Exodus. I really hope you take advantage of opportunities to acquaint yourself with biblical texts. I really hope you took the time to wrestle with tough themes and difficult stories. I hope you took the time to draw the parallels and took note of how similar our journeys of faith is with the ancient Israelites. I hope you realize that an embrace of their story or this story is informative to our own faith stories. It has been said by many theologians that the Exodus story is the story that most informs all other stories in the Bible. Even the Apostle Paul draws correlations to the Exodus. Take, for instance, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1, it says, "For I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud and that they passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ." So do you see how in the story of ancient Israel, Paul found a connection to Christ? It was the Exodus story that was informative to much of Paul's theology. Now, that was the purpose of our journey over the past 4 months. We wanted to find connections, and there were plenty of connections. I mean, Israel's predicament can be traced back to creation and the fall of mankind. And our predicament here today is often one that we can trace back to creation and the fall. You see, we have war in our time, and we have tragedies, and we have people who have cancer, and we have people who are dying, and we can trace all of that back to creation and the fall of man when sin entered this world, and decay and conflict and strife and struggle began way back then. And Israel's predicament was one that they could trace back to that. And we can trace our predicament. We can trace our situations all the way back to creation and the fall of man. Israel was oppressed, and they cried out for help. And our predicament is often one characterized by being oppressed. Some of us have been oppressed by addictions, and some of us have been repressed by our own minds, and we're oppressed and we need to be freed, and we cry out for rescue. The story of Exodus is a story of God's liberation. He came down to where Israel was in Egypt in their oppression, and he liberated them. He rescued them. He gave them freedom, and we want freedom. We want freedom from our addictions, from our minds, and from other people's systems. And we want God to liberate us and free us. The story of Exodus is a story of God's, this is a story of God's divine presence. He's there. He's in the midst. He's in the midst of Israel. He wanted them to know that even though they were going through pain and they were going through struggle and they were going through hurt and they were oppressed, that God was with them. And in the midst of our struggle, God is here and he liberates. And Jesus Christ is the ultimate picture of liberation because he has freed us from the chains and bondages of sin. The story of Exodus is about God using ordinary people and for unordinary purposes. He used midwives. He used siblings. He used Moses, an imperfect man. He was a murderer. He had a speech impediment, but God called him to speak up against the most powerful human being ruler on the planet. And God is using us. He is shaping us and molding us, each and every one of us, into his instruments. We are raw products, but after God finishes with us, we become refined like precious metals. God believes in us sometimes more than we believe in ourselves. The story of Exodus is a story of God's deliverance. Exodus literally means the way out. God is the way out. I want you to memorize that. God is the way out. God is Exodus. So then for us, God is the way out. God is the liberator. God is the one who rescues. So we cry out to him for help and for rescue. The story of Exodus is a story of celebration. When God rescued the people of Israel, they lost their mind and worshiped with all of their hearts with dancing, and they celebrated and they celebrated a memorial meal, the Passover, that was instituted to remember their liberation. And for us, we worship and celebrate our rescue and liberation through praise and remembrance. The communion is an example of a sacred meal we participate in to pronounce our liberation. The story of Exodus is a story of God purging the hearts and minds of Israel of their Egyptian ethics that were unjust and they were crude and immoral. God was determined for his people to be holy, which just means separate. The Israelites' passion for social justice was important to God. God enacted a system of social justice that was radical. It meant care for the poor, the mistreated, the foreigner, and the enemy. And for us, this system of radical justice continues. The core of Jesus' teaching regarding social responsibility is rooted in our drastic concern for the last, the lost, and the least among us. The story of Exodus is a story of God's intention to dwell in the midst of his people. God's instructions regarding the temporary structure, the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, was filled with artifacts and symbols of religious and symbols that represented the spiritual life of Israel. And it served as a visual reminder of God's presence in the midst of of the people. And that visual may help us to understand the words in the fourth gospel, in John's gospel, in chapter 1, verse 14, where he says, "The word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." That word, his dwelling among us, literally means tabernacle. Jesus came to be our tabernacle. And that was a way of God saying, "I am with you." It says that he made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Do you see the Exodus language, even in the Gospel of John? Jesus became the visual reminder of God's presence. He is among us, and he lives in us and among us. Now, that's the essence of the book of Exodus and all the connections. But that summary that I just gave was packed with references that was heavily weighted towards God's character and activity. The Exodus story also reveals much about the human condition, and we saw that we had some issues. Humans have some issues. The Israelites grumbled, they complained, and they just event after event they showed that they had problems with trusting in God, and that's why they wandered. And guess what, church? We do the same thing. The Israelites had memory issues. After all that God had did, after all that he had done, after all he had instructed them, after all the miraculous rescues, after all the singing and the dancing, and all we've been delivered by the mighty hand of God, and for a blip, so you remember Justin's sermon last week, they had one thing to do, and they forgot. Memory issues. And we do the same thing. Because those moments where we know that God rescued us and he healed us and he cured us and he brought us good fortune. And just the minute we run into some trouble, we forget. We do the same thing. So as we conclude our journey in Exodus, we are left to ponder what should be the lingering thought. I mean, it's like asking a question. Okay, we've read Exodus, we've heard all these sermons. So what? I want to close with a couple of reflections. I find the conclusion of the Exodus story to be a bit abrupt and anticlimactic. I'm just as a reader of literature, all that we've read so far in the book of Exodus, you kind of expect at the end like a fireworks show or something, or something that's kind of kind of ends abrupt. We leave the Exodus, we just finished the story of the golden calf, and that's a pretty important story in the life of Israel. Later on, after the kingdom is split, that one of the kings started idol worship, and do you know what he built as their main idol? A calf. It comes back. There's some connection, what took place at the golden calf that takes place later on in history. But after the golden calf story, it goes right back into this tabernacle and build this, and that's what Moses is doing. And chapter 40 is basically a summary of all the things that Moses did. Well, then Moses did that, then Moses did that, then he did that, then he did that, and then he finishes work, and then we're left at this tent of meeting, this tabernacle. Moses has completed all that God has commanded him to do. A cloud covers the tabernacle. The glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And a promise was reiterated that wherever the Israelites went, the glory of God was with them. It was in their presence. And all the Israelites, that's an important phrase, that all of Israel saw God's presence. See, Exodus is about the way out, and it's also about abiding presence. Many theologians would offer that the book of Exodus was written during a time of exile, Babylonian exile, when they were enslaved again, and there was this question of suffering, there was this question of like, how did we get here? And the Exodus story kind of tells the story of how they got there. Hundreds of years later, it's almost to say, see, we repeated the same things and we're right back where we're at. But there was also this question, is that we're oppressed and we don't have our own land, like, where is God? The story of Exodus is one that says, God is where he said he would be. He's in your presence, his abiding presence. That's one of the major themes of Exodus and the Bible. There's something about presence that just does something for us. I remember I was in second grade, 7 years old, 6 or 7 years old. It was winter time in Buffalo. If you don't know what wintertime in a Buffalo is, multiply what happens when we close school here times like 10. That's winter time in Buffalo. And oftentimes they didn't cancel school when there was 6 inches of snow or 7 or 8 inches. They didn't cancel school in Buffalo. We went to school, and I was a car rider, which meant that my mother dropped me off at school and she would come pick me up at school. I remember this one day, school was getting out and a snowstorm hit, and I went outside to wait for my mother to come pick me up in this snowstorm, and I had a hood with some, like, some, I don't know, rabbit fur on it or something like that, and I remember sitting there waiting for mom to come, and it was cold, and I suspect that I could have went to the building because my mother was late, and I could have just knocked on the door and said, hey, can I come in? My mother is late, but I just didn't think that was the right thing to do. I thought the right thing to do was to just wait for my mother to come pick me up. And I remember just standing out there, and I was doing this, and I remember tears were coming down a little bit, but I'd wipe them away because I knew she was going to be there. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I stood out there for like 2 hours in a snowstorm. And my mother she forgot that she had to pick me up. She forgot. And do you know, when she showed up, I wasn't angry. I didn't ask, like, for any explanations. I just wanted her presence. I just wanted her to be, I just wanted to be in the car next to her. The heat in the car didn't, it helped. But I just wanted my mother's presence. The story of Exodus was written to some folks who felt like they were out in the cold, in a snowstorm. Where is mommy? And she showed up. And all I wanted to do is be in her presence. Now, here's the thing. Here's what I love about worship. Here's what I love about when we come together to worship. There are just these times when we come to worship, man, we just feel the presence of God in this place. But here's the problem I have with worship. Sometimes we think that the only place to experience the presence of God is when we worship. And so sometimes we leave out of here and we feel like we've left the presence of God. One of the stories that we need to get straight when you start studying the building of the temple. How many of us know that God never asked for his people to build a temple? In fact, when David was coming up with, like, yeah, we're about to build a temple, God told his prophet Nathan to go to David and tell him this. He says, when have I ever asked that you build me a house of cedar, a temple? He never wanted a temple. I think one of the reasons he never wanted a temple, and one of the reasons that tabernacle theology is so strong, is that God wanted the people to know that wherever you go, I go. When you build a temple, you say God is over there, then you say, well, let's go to God, and then let's go away from God. But the tabernacle, did you see the end of Exodus? So it's really not that kind of boring. It's kind of powerful that the end of Exodus says the tabernacle and the glory of the Lord filled that tabernacle, and all of Israel saw it, and wherever they traveled, the presence of the Lord went with them. That's tabernacle theology. We sometimes focus on temple theology, which means the glory of the Lord is in this church building. No. Our bodies are the tabernacle. Our bodies are the tabernacle. That means God's presence is right here. Wherever we go, God's presence. I just want to end with this final reflection. I'm not an artist. You've seen my art, probably some of you. I can draw a mean stick figure, but that's about the limit of my art. You know what? In many ways, I'm not an art, you know, as far as, you know, molding or sculpting or painting. But you get me in the kitchen. Got some fans in the house right here. This past Friday, we were gonna have small group. I said, you know, I'm just in the mood to just throw some coals on the grill and get me some apple wood and get me some baby back ribs and I'm in the kitchen and I take the membrane off the baby back ribs and I take a rub and I rub them down good and season them up good and make sure my fire's ready to go and I throw them on there, you know, get the temperature right, cook for about 3 hours on the grill, and then while it was cooking on the grill, I'm in the kitchen, I'm making my sauce and I'm making sure it's got enough of the tomato base and enough of the brown sugar and enough of the vinegar and all those things and then I take them off the grill and I let them rest for a little while and I just step back sometimes like whoo, and then I cut them up good because, you know, we're having guests over and I don't want people just grabbing whole slabs of ribs. I just want you to grab one at a time, and then I sauce them up good, and while no one is looking, I steal me a taste of one, just and you just take a bite and you just step back and you go, mm. And sometimes when you do something so good, you just kind of step back. I'm not gonna lie, no one was there to listen, but man, I bit one and it was so good, and I stepped back, I said, "Whoo! I'm a bad boy and That's kind of, I would imagine those of you who are artists, that's what you do. I've been watching Dean up here painting for the past several minutes. And one of the things that I really enjoy is when he paints something and then he steps back. He takes his glasses off and And then he like fix something like that. Then he back up and then he shakes his head. Yeah, that's it. A few weeks ago, I got my car detailed for the very first time. I've never had a car detailed. I don't know all what, I know car detailers clean cars, but I'm often sort of just intrigued by the whole process of getting your car detailed. And so some friends of mine, they're in Summer Rays, by the way. If you need your car detailed, I have the perfect car detailers for you. They came over to the house and they were going to detail my car. Now the inside of my car was pretty bad. It was pretty bad, and they're not leather seats; they're cloth seats. So I'm immediately saying, like, how are you going to clean? They didn't have any like high-powered machines or extractors. All he had were hands, some buckets, and some cleaners. I'm like, how are they going to clean my car? And I remember watching them clean the car, and I was cutting the grass at the times, and there were times where I would just stop and I would just pause and I would see one of the guys, you know, he had his rag and he'd clean a spot on it, he had waxed the car, and he'd clean it and he'd back up and look at it and he'd be like, nope, that ain't right. He'd do some more cleaning that, and then he'd go, ah. And it was so cool watching these detailers detail the car and take delight and joy in what they were doing, as if to say, this is what I do. I'm good at what I do, and I'm admiring my work. Just look how, man, that was a mess before I touched it. And then they called me out. So I went inside for something. They called me out and said, hey, Dion, we want you to see something. And they showed me this. Can you go to that next picture? Can you click that next picture? Yeah. They lifted up the seats. This is so embarrassing for me to show y'all this, church, but they lifted up my back seats where my children sit, I might add. And man, they found Skittles and French fries and petrified nuggets and Waldo and Amelia Earhart's plane, and they found everything in that back seat. And I came outside, I said, I cannot believe my car looks like that. But then, next picture, they cleaned it. They cleaned it. They cleaned it. They did a good job. You said, for how long? My kids ain't never riding my car again. Why am I telling y'all a story about detailing? It's because as I reflected on that picture, I started thinking about my life and the nooks and crannies in my life and the dirt in my life and the broken pieces in my life and the pieces in my life that I thought that God couldn't even touch. It's like kind of like the car. There was those nooks and crannies in the car. I was like, how did you clean that? And you should see them. They got these little brushes and they get down, they get into places where I can't, you know, you go vacuum your car at a car place and you can't get those, that one Skittle that's stuck in the, I like Skittles, by the way. You can't get that one Skittle. They got it. They were able to do that. But in order for them to get to those nooks and crannies, I had to let them. I had to open up my car. I had to let them see the embarrassing mess that I had in my car. But they cleaned it and they took delight in it. We're talking about Exodus, Dion. Yeah. You see, it's not just abiding presence of the Lord that we contend with. It's a creator God that is so detailed in his work that just God, when he created us, remember the creation story? He created trees, oh, that's good. He created skies, oh, that's good. Birds, that's kind of good too. When he created us, he stepped back and was like, I am a bad boy. Okay, he said, it's very good. So why do we think that if there is something that's broken in our life or something that's dirty in our life, that God can't fix it, that God can't make it beautiful, that God can't clean it? I doubted car detailers and they went in that car and they cleaned it all up. So what makes us think as an individual or as a community that God can't fix us and clean us and renew us and restore us and buff us up and make us beautiful? So the story of Exodus is God taking his people out of a bad situation. They were broken, they were hurt, they were abused, they felt bad about themselves, they felt lower than humans. And God says, come, let me dwell among you and let me do some detail work. Let me do with you that what no one else can do. Go to the next slide, next slide. This is what was on the canvas that Dean started with. Dean started with this about an hour and a half ago. It's got form, it's got some color on it. Need some work though. And that's where we all are, right? We all need some work. We all, if we would just put ourselves in the hands of the creator God of Yahweh, allow his presence to just invade our spaces and invade our lives and invade our heart. I wonder what God could do with our canvases. I wonder what he could do. Hey, Dean, are you ready to reveal? Keep preaching? Okay. Jeez. Okay. I'll start walking this way. By the time I get to the front, I need you to turn. So Tuesday, yeah. And here's the thing. Okay, one thing. God doesn't put a finishing stamp on us necessarily. We're always in the process of being renewed and restored and made beautiful. I'm trying to think of some other adjectives to give Dean some more time. and perfected. It's half done. Okay. Well, let's just take a look.
Maybe we could get some lunch.
Okay.
And then I'll be done after lunch. All right.
But I.
It's not good.
He'll keep working on it. But you can turn it. Why don't you turn it? Let's just see where you're at. Need help here? That's it. What if I did?
That's a start.
But Dean, again, what I see.
You know what that is?
That looks like a dolphin.
A dolphin?
Yeah.
Well, Tuesday the dolphin will be gone.
Okay. What it explain it to?
Okay, when it's done, you know, and this is all rendered, which is just a bunch of chicken scratches. Now, this is the exact view that Moses would have been looking at. It, from Jordan into the Promised Land, being this yellow crap is the Promised Land. That's the north end of the Dead Sea. And it looks just like that today, except for all the nonsense going on. It's the same thing he'd been looking at.
I love the description of that being yellow crap.
What would you call it?
I see it.
It's too much stuff to render.
But look at where it started. And look at where we're at.
It's about the same,
except for the yellow crap. What if we, as a body of believers, put ourselves in a place for God to do some work with us? What if we were unashamed to show our junk? What if we were unashamed to fess up that we've got some dirt in our lives? And what if we put ourselves in position for God to do something incredible with us? The Exodus was just the beginning. And for us, the Exodus, it's just the beginning. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse number 13. Go to the next slide. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a what? A what? A what? A what? A what? A what? A Exodus. Paul's theology is wrapped up in the Exodus. And each and every one of us today can experience Exodus today. My prayer for you, my prayer for me, my prayer for our church, our prayer for believers everywhere, my prayer for mankind is that we will let God's abiding presence take its residence, fill this place, and do amazing things with our lives, with our church. Is that all right? That's all I have. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for your abiding presence. We thank you so much for being a miraculous, mighty hand. We thank you so much for liberating us. We thank you for rescuing us. We thank you for teaching us. We thank you for cleaning us. We thank you for redeeming us. We thank you for loving us. Even when we do jacked up things, God, we thank you for forgiving us and being gracious toward us. We thank you for being our exodus, for being the way out. God, I pray that we would become a canvas, an unfinished work, that we open up to you to do beauty, to be a creator, God, to take what has been destroyed by sin and destruction and death and chaos, to restore it anew to your wonderful and beautiful creation. Thank you for this body, and may we continue to give all of our worship to you. May we never bow down to another idol or another way or another system. We love you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. As we stand and sing, if there's anything that the church can do for you, pray for you, talk with you, share with you, if there's something you want to share, you want to be vulnerable with us this morning, come as we stand and sing.